accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning, the 4th of June, 2016. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us in studio. Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and of course our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. Alongside analysts Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We welcome you to the program. Gentlemen, we're going to get started, of course, talking about the Winnipeg Jets as we do each and every segment, but we'd be remiss if we didn't touch on the big news in the sporting world, really in the entire world, that is the passing overnight of Muhammad Ali at the age of 74, suffering for the last number of years from the effects of Parkinson's disease. We had heard late yesterday that he was in respiratory distress, and then overnight, Muhammad Ali, at the age of 74, does pass away. The one of the greatest heavyweights of all time. You can argue about his in-ring ability, but he's certainly one of the greatest. But he's probably the most recognizable athlete of the 20th century, I would suspect, worldwide. And the political influence and the sporting influence that he had on the world, I think, is unmatched and will be unmatched for years and generations to come.
Well, there's no question about that, Drew. I mean, grow up in my house, if you don't know who Muhammad Ali was, I watched all the old fights. I've seen all the big ones, one through three of Joe Frazier, his fights with Joe Frazier, and, of course, his battle with George Foreman, amongst others. So, I mean, as impactful as any athlete of the 20th century. Very sad news.
Yeah, we're certainly not boxing experts. We're not going to pretend to be boxing experts. So, but we would be remiss if we didn't, off the top of the show, address the fact that Muhammad Ali passed away. There are plenty of wonderful tributes online. You can seek those out for yourself. There will be, of course, continuing coverage regarding that here on the station. But we would be out of our element, and we're not going to pretend to be anything other than what we are. I do recommend, though, I have had the pleasure of visiting, of course, Louisville, Kentucky more than one occasion. I was just there this past week. And the Muhammad Ali Museum in Louisville, Kentucky is wonderful. I do highly recommend that if you ever get the opportunity to visit Louisville, check out this museum. You will see Muhammad Ali from start to his untimely death last night. Just his entire life summed up in a wonderful exhibit, multiple exhibits, and you get to see all videos of all the fantastic fights like you just mentioned, Richard Frazier, Joe Frazier, the fights against George Foreman, Sonny Liston, on and on and on. Muhammad Ali passing away.
George Shavallo as well.
George Shavallo, of course, the Canadian. I think Muhammad Ali said on more than one occasion that the fight against George Shavallo was one of his toughest. Well, I believe it happened at Maple Leaf Gardens, if I'm not mistaken. I don't remember exactly.
Yeah, and you nailed it, Drew. Muhammad Ali is the original greatest of all time. And for that fight, I believe George Shavallo and Muhammad Ali went 15 rounds when they used to fight 15 rounds. Now mm-hmm. they fight 12 rounds. So yeah. George Shavallo, probably mm-hmm. the greatest Canadian boxer of all time. And Muhammad Ali, obviously the greatest boxer in general of all time, and really transcends sport, right? He's probably, as you mentioned, the most recognizable athlete around the world, with maybe the exception of Michael Jordan and Tiger Woods and a few others, right? But yeah, it's very sad news.
Absolutely. So, you know, condolences, of course, to the Ali family on the passing of Muhammad Ali. Awkward transition, but that's the way it's going to have to be, to the Winnipeg Jets with the news. Two things from sort of Jets world over the course of the week. The first being that Grant Clitsam retired because of the back injury that he had suffered a couple years ago. So, you know, let's talk about, you know, pay tribute to the guy. Grant Clitsam was a guy who was sort of a fringe player that the Jets picked up off waivers by the Columbus Blue Jackets, and had a good season in Winnipeg, had a good couple years in Winnipeg, was able to parlay that into a 3-year, $6.2 million contract. You never want to see a player have to go out not on his own terms. You don't never want to see a player that have to retire due to injury. So I think it's, you know, probably time well spent to spend a couple minutes talking about Grant Clipsom, talking about the game and the contribution he had to the Winnipeg Jets in his time with the organization.
Yeah, Drew, it's unfortunate that Grant Clipsom wasn't able to have a longer NHL career, and you're right. The opportunity that was given to him by the Winnipeg Jets was probably the best opportunity he was given in the NHL. You mentioned he was claimed off of waivers. His best season was that year that he came over in the lockout. The year after, he came over and, you know, had a 16-point season. Last year, he didn't play at all, as you know. Mm-hmm. And the year before, I think he was around 20 games or something like that. And a guy like Grant Clipsom was a pretty unassuming defenseman, but a very solid defenseman, good offensively, good instincts. But the back problems that he was having were just too much, right? So it's unfortunate. He was the type of guy that last year figured to maybe be a sixth or seventh defenseman for the Winnipeg Jets, but he just couldn't come back from those back problems. So it's unfortunate news, and you know, we wish him all the best in his future endeavors.
Absolutely. His final NHL game was January 3rd, 2015 against the Toronto Maple Leafs. And according to Dave Manuk of LegalCurve.com, his final NHL goal was scored back on November 10th, 2013 against the San Jose Sharks. Richard, your thoughts on Grant Clipsom in the game that you saw, you know, in the number of games that you saw him play here in Winnipeg?
I mean, you know, guys, he was more of a bottom-pairing defenseman or extra guy, depending on the situation. I think he got thrust into a role maybe a little bit over what he was capable of based on the lack of depth on the left side. But overall, his career, I mean, you know, he's a solid NHL player. He could shoot the puck. He had some good attributes for sure. And, you know, I think thankfully for a guy like him, you get the security of that kind of that 3-year deal that you weren't sure you'd ever get. And you'd hope, you know, investing that money wisely will allow him to be a little bit more stable financially than some of the other guys who play. And again, not that they don't make a lot of money, but they make it for a short period of time. And I think he's probably thankful for that, for sure. And always, to my knowledge, with people who are in the room, good with the media and respectful. So, unfortunate.
Yeah, Richie, he was a very well-liked guy in the dressing room. I know that. And, you know, for him, you know, he finishes his career with 205 NHL games, and it doesn't work out, and possibly, you know, has a future in the hockey world. I'm sure he's reevaluating what he's going to do now.
Yeah.
But you know, certainly a guy who the teammates are going to miss around the locker room, and he's been around the team even though he hasn't been on the ice because he's been recovering from back surgery. But you know, certainly a guy that can hang his head high after a successful NHL career, even though it was very brief.
Sure, but he made the most of his opportunity. He right. got, you know, he got his first significant playing time with the Jets and was able to parlay that into a yep. you know, a $6 million contract, so good for him, and all the best to Grant Clipsom, like you said, as he on his future endeavors. We move away from a current Winnipeg Jets player to a former Winnipeg Jets player. That's Andrew Ladd. In Elliot Friedman's 30 Thoughts column, he speaks to Andrew Ladd, who's about to embark on the free agency period, and it's pretty clear based on the comments you know, from Ladd that the returning to the Chicago Blackhawks is a non-starter. We know the Blackhawks and their salary cap issues. Mm-hmm. It's just not going to work out. So, you know, he talks about some of his other options, and he talks about the Winnipeg Jets. Elliot Friedman asks Andrew Ladd, would that be an option? And here's the quote from Andrew Ladd, quote, "I've said since I left I would never close the door. We enjoyed our time there." Andrew speaking about him and his wife, Brandy. "We'll see if that's an option. It takes two willing combatants." So that's Andrew Ladd speaking about the possibility of returning to Winnipeg as a member of the Jets. Do you see that being a possibility, or do you think the door is closed on that, maybe from a organization perspective as opposed to from a Andrew Ladd player perspective?
I said this towards the end of the regular season after Andrew Ladd was traded to the Chicago Blackhawks. I thought there was a 0% chance he was coming back to Winnipeg, and we know that there was an offer on the table for Andrew Ladd, 6 years, $6 million a year. That's been famously published from many sources. And, you know, Andrew Ladd, first of all, if he wanted to stay with Chicago, would have to take a significant, if you want to call it, hometown discount, even mm-hmm. though he's not from there, but he's played there before. I just don't see it happening, Drew. I mean, there was a long process where the Jets could have signed Andrew Ladd. We thought he was going to sign last offseason, mm-hmm. and it didn't happen. I'm not saying that Andrew Ladd and the Winnipeg Jets don't have a good relationship, or that Andrew Ladd wouldn't sign in Winnipeg. I just don't see it happening with everything that happened last year with the distraction, Andrew Ladd coming back from the sports hernia surgery, mm-hmm. and then having that kind of being an issue that at times, Richie, I think weighed the Jets down, not just Andrew Ladd's contract status, but Dustin Byfuglien's contract status at times, I think, was a distraction for the Jets. Nobody in the room is going to say that. Mm-hmm. But I think at times, certainly when the Jets play sagged a little bit in the middle to, you know, three-quarter mark of the season, I think Buff signed and then the writing was on the wall that Andrew Ladd was going to be traded. And I actually think the return that the Jets got for Andrew Ladd wasn't bad. But no, Drew, I don't see Andrew Ladd signing here in the offseason. And especially if he's looking in that $6.5 to $7 million range, Rich. Mm-hmm. With the fact that Mark Scheifele is going to be signed to his second contract, Jacob Trouba is going to be signed to his second contract, the Jets are going to have other players coming off their contracts at the end of next season, Drew. I just don't see it happening. And is it impossible? No. But I think it's very improbable that he would come back now after being traded and turning down a contract. I think, by the way, that contract offer, he probably wouldn't get that again.
I don't think he would get it either. But, Rich, your thoughts?
No, I think that what Ezzy's point at the end there is the most important one. You have to sign Trouba and Scheifele, and you have to have you have to be able to project moving forward how much money you're going to have. So say Scheifele costs you $6 million a year on a fairly long-term deal, and say Trouba costs you between 5 and 6. So let's just say $11 million combined. That puts them next year at about $62, $63 million on the cap. If you bring in a guy like Andrew Ladd at $5 million, say $5 to $6 million, based on market now and him having not signed a contract, yada, 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 you're getting close to the upper end of the cap, and then you have to take into account the contracts that are coming after that and not the young players. So I know contracts do come off the books as well. But I just don't think it fits in as it may have before. So I don't see it happening.
You know, in terms of what Andrew Ladd can expect on the open market, I mean, you know, you can sort of make the compare. You can talk about him and, you know, maybe to some extent David Backes and Louis Eriksson sort of all being in the same boat as over 30 players who are seeking a big deal. Is that deal going to be there for those guys? Or is it going to be, I mean, is 6 years a possibility even for these guys anymore? Or are they looking probably closer to the 2-3 year contracts in terms of length?
Well, I'll let Richie get in here in a second, but I think the days of 30-plus-year-old guys that are more second-line, third-line guys getting six-year contracts are over. I think if you're a 30-year-old player that is a bona fide first-line center, first-line winger, top-pairing defenseman, yeah, maybe you get a 5- or 6-year contract. But I think a lot of teams right now are afraid of, for example, the Dustin Brown contract. The Dustin Brown contract, it doesn't look like a good contract. By the way, I've always been a big fan of Dustin Brown. I'm just talking in terms of contract length.
Sure.
I think he's got another 5 years left on his contract at $5 million plus. For a guy that's getting 25, 30 points, he's just not the same player that he was in 2012 when he was a dominant forward, right? And the Kings were winning the Cup. So I think, you know, when you're talking about Andrew Ladd, David Backes, Louis Eriksson's a little bit different, Drew, because Louis Eriksson, I think, is more of a dynamic offensive player. I think Ladd and Backes, you're talking about two-way forwards, 50 to 55 point guys at this point in their career is their ceiling, even though Andrew Ladd just had a career season 2 years ago. But I think when you're talking about Ladd, I think you're probably looking at a 3- or 4-year deal. Same thing goes with Backes. I don't know if teams are going to sign players that are 30, 31 years old to 5- or 6-year contracts because that just ties up too much money, especially with the salary cap staying at what it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the biggest thing, the salary cap staying at what it is and how cautious are teams. And how does the Stamkos situation play out? I mean, he's the first one. Where does he go?
Mm-hmm.
And how do the chips fall from there? So I don't know if you're in the 2- to 3-year thing. I mean, maybe you're in the middle ground there in the 4-year where you're not. I mean, 2-3 years is not enough to get somebody in free agency. 5 to 6 may be too extensive, certainly for a guy like Backes who plays a more physical style than both Louis Eriksson and Andrew Ladd. Andrew Ladd's game has become less physical over time, in my opinion. Louis Eriksson seems to have overcome the concussion issues that he faced, but his game is more of a speed up and down game. David Backes is to me is similar to Ryan Kessler. Now Ryan Kessler got a long term deal. Does it have to come from the guy from the team that he's with right now? Doug Armstrong's already said he's prioritizing Jaden Schwartz's contract over every other one. Getting the core signed along with Vladimir Tarasenko just signed a long-term deal. So it may be that the circumstances of the landscape has changed and the contract length is somewhere in the range of 4 years.
July 1st is right around the corner, less than a month to go. We'll find out in the next month what happens with all of these pending unrestricted free agents. Let's head to break. When we come back, we talk about the Stanley Cup Finals. The Penguins are up 2-0 on the Sharks. We'll talk about it next here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
Teardrops on the city bed, scooter searching for his groove.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
After 9, Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We welcome you back to the program. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
New sign is up.
Yeah, I saw the new sign driving there. I had lunch there yesterday. The sign is fantastic looking. You can see it when you're driving down Cordon Avenue. So check it out, Bernstein's Deli. Nice new sign as well.
Bright lights, big deli. That was terrible.
It was a little bad, but that's okay. Have you guys ever cheated on a face-off?
Well, I mean, I think, Drew...
I've cheated on a biology test.
Did you do well?
Maybe I shouldn't be announcing that on radio, but high school was a long time ago, so.
It's true.
I could see a movie being made about Ezzy having to go back to high school because he cheated on a biology test.
That would be a good movie.
It's funny you mention that because I was watching Billy Madison this morning at like 7:30 in the morning.
I watched Happy Gilmore 2 weekends ago.
You guys are really using your time valuably, I got to say.
It was the best. It's the best.
Those are two of the best movies of all time.
They're very amusing. I can't argue with you there.
That's my boy can be thrown in there, too.
Have you ever cheated on a face-off? Drew, I think every player cheats on a face-off. I don't think any center goes into the circle not thinking that the opposing center is either, you know, in on an angle, not putting their stick where they're supposed to, and not set up as they should be. And so that is... You play center at any level, you're going to think at some point the guy on the other side is not doing something that you think is right. And the truth is, you know, Logan Couture has probably got to set aside his complaining, because the truth is if you think somebody is taking liberties and doing something, then most centers do it themselves. And maybe they're not as good at it. And let's be clear here. I'm going to get right into it. Let's be clear. Sidney Crosby has a very unconventional way of taking faceoffs. Like when Logan Couture talks about how he times his faceoffs, yeah, he times his faceoffs, but very few players hold their stick the way Sidney Crosby does and are able to get enough leverage and have that much body strength to be able to win draws the way he does. So he does it in a very unconventional style. I don't think Logan Couture is able to adjust to that, and I think that's leading a lot to his frustration just as much as the way Crosby is quote-unquote cheating.
Let's hear from Logan Couture. This is yesterday after he made the initial comments about Crosby cheating.
Everyone cheats on face-offs. I cheat. Jumbo cheats. That's how you try and win draws. So, you know, he's one of the best at it, and he wins a lot of face-offs. I don't know if it got scrutiny. I mean, if it did, it did. I mean, if you ask their centermen, they're going to say that we cheat as well. So, you know, that's just what centermen do. They try and get an advantage. Sometimes it's fair, sometimes it's unfair. The refs do a good job usually of kicking guys out when they need to be kicked out. When you get in a draw, the linesman tells you get your stick down, and then he drops it. Sometimes he stops it if it's an unfair advantage, sometimes they don't.
Were you perhaps sending a little bit of a message to officials just to sort of have an eyeball on that later in the series?
Not at all, no. I mean, these guys are the best in the world at what they do. I've got no complaints with the officials throughout these playoffs. They've been very, very good in our games.
Well, I mean, that's clearly somebody from above. I mean, I shouldn't say clearly somebody from above. Clearly, he had more time to think about it and maybe was spoken to from somebody above, being the coach or teammates or the general manager. The last thing you want to do when you're down to nothing, the last thing you want to do when you're up to nothing, if that were the case, would be to motivate the best player in the world.
Drew, Sidney Crosby is not doing anything wrong here. And if you go to TSN.ca, you can read Carey Fraser broke it down.
With video, with pictures and still frames, it's a fantastic read.
Yes. Carey Fraser knows what he's talking about. He was a referee for decades in the NHL. As Logan Couture just said, and Richie, I agree with you, by the way. I think Logan Couture is changing his tune, because after Game 2, Logan Couture and Mark Edward Vlasic were the two players that were complaining. And to me, this whole hullabaloo here about Sidney Crosby, whether he's cheating, is a sign that the San Jose Sharks are frustrated. The San Jose Sharks have not been good in the first two games in Pittsburgh. I'd say they've had maybe one good period, and that was the third period of Game 2 when they came on there.
Second period of Game 1, they were better.
Okay, so maybe they've had two good periods out of six good periods, but San Jose's had the other four. And the San Jose Sharks right now, I think, are frustrated, but they're also looking for some type of edge. For me, the San Jose Sharks, too, haven't been very physical, Drew. I don't think they've been making it very hard for the Pittsburgh Penguins. They're not directing enough shots. But, you know, when
you
you're talking...
You can't hit when you can't catch it.
Exactly, Rich.
Is it the speed factor, then, that's sure. been...
Well, sure. Pittsburgh...
It's not that San Jose's a slow team.
No. Yeah. And you got to give Jim Rutherford credit for the types of players that he's assembled, and you got to give Mike Sullivan credit for playing guys like Connor Sheary and Brian Rust, speedy guys that complement Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin, right? But it's a fast team, Drew. Just wanted to mention one thing, though, about faceoffs. When you're talking about the top faceoff guys, David Backes, Jonathan Toews, Joe Thornton is a top faceoff guy, Paul Gostad on Nashville is a top faceoff guy. When Richie's talking about unconventional, most guys get down low and they almost kind of try to sweep the puck and use their body and get lower. Crosby always takes the faceoffs on his forehand, and that's something that he changed from earlier in his career. He didn't used to do that. And he doesn't get as low, and he kind of has this technique where it's all about timing. Faceoffs are all about timing in general.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that on that particular play, what's being lost is that Sidney Crosby was the architect of that entire play. He told Connor Sheary where to go. He knew he was going to win the draw back to Chris Letang. To me, that was a stroke of genius, that goal in overtime, winning the faceoff against Joel Ward, knowing that if Connor Sheary kind of curled back behind him instead of Chris Letang shooting the puck. And we don't know if Sidney Crosby told Connor Sheary to go exactly where he went.
Well, Sheary said he told him to go to the soft spot, and
right.
Crosby did move Letang to his off wing there.
Yes.
So, I mean, as far as I can tell, he absolutely set that play up.
I mean, I think it's a play of the best player in the world demonstrating that he is the best player in the world, and he sees the game in a manner in which, you know, there's a lot of players on that ice who see the game in a fantastic manner, but Sidney Crosby sees it probably even better than the others. So this is Crosby. I mean, he said it himself that he calls 25 plays a game, and, you know,
yes,
this is the one he
right,
got right.
Right.
But, you know, the best players in the biggest moments, and that's when the spotlight is shining the brightest, and he was able to deliver for the Penguins in overtime in game two.
You're right, Drew. 9 times out of 10, maybe that doesn't work. But the fact is, it's in the Stanley Cup Finals. It's in overtime. It's game two at home, and he calls that play, and back to the faceoffs again, Richie. When a guy doesn't put his stick down and he's the attacking forward in the attacking zone and his stick is down second, it's very common for guys not to completely put their stick down. It doesn't necessarily mean you're going to win the faceoff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're supposed to put your stick down, and you see that all the time. I mean, if you were to go back and look at all of the games that have been played in the NHL playoffs this year, you would see that happen dozens of times.
Hey, listen, the Pittsburgh Penguins have been the better team by a considerable margin. So, I mean, this is not, oh, if this didn't happen, Pittsburgh wouldn't have lucked. Pittsburgh has been the better team and deserves to be up 2-0. There's, to me, absolutely no question about it.
You can argue that neither game should have been a one-goal game. I mean, game two shouldn't have gone to overtime. Game one shouldn't have been a one-goal game. Pittsburgh, I think, you know, there was a lot of commentary online that game one was reminiscent of Canada versus the U.S., at the Olympics, given how much Pittsburgh and how secure Pittsburgh seemed with that 1-0 lead there for a little while and how dominant they were for the majority of that game.
They've dictated the way that they want to play and their speed. And Ezzy and I talked about it last week, their speed against that third pairing. We talked about that, and you remember the goal in was it game one, the pressure on Polak and Dylan. That's been a problem for them, and that speed Pittsburgh can. San Jose is, you know, we talked about it last week, and again, there's still a long way to go in this series, although San Jose has to change their, you know, the way they play and their effectiveness quickly because it could get out of hand. But you look at it, and the teams that they've played, Los Angeles being one and St. Louis being another, and the Nashville's team can move. Not as well as Pittsburgh can, but St. Louis and the Kings allowed San Jose to have a significant advantage skating-wise, and we talked about it last week. that advantage is not here, and you could argue they are at a disadvantage skating-wise 1 through 18. And that makes you adjust. And, you know, you have to look also at the effectiveness of, if you're looking at the guys who are particularly good skaters on the Sharks, and they have a lot of good skaters, but their top line is not, and I'm not sure if Herdo is going to play today or not, but their top line of Thornton and Pavelski is not a line that is going to skate around you. They're going to find holes. They're going to find, and I thought when you saw Thornton going at Crosby and Crosby not even reacting last game, to me it looked like Crosby had a singular focus of the Stanley Cup, and it looked like Joe Thornton was losing his cool a little bit. And the space and time that he's had in previous series aren't there anymore.
And Joe Thornton, Rich, is not an antagonist. I mean, that's not his game. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's a big guy,
yeah.
And he has the ability to lay a body check here and there. But Joe Thornton is not a David Backes. He's not the type of guy that's going to lay six or seven body checks a game.
Right.
I agree with Rich. I think Thornton is frustrated. I think the entire line, Thomas Hertl had the goal in game one. But I think that right now you're seeing a San Jose Sharks team that isn't doing what they were doing in the first three rounds. They don't have time. And, you know, Rich mentions the speed. The thing is with Pittsburgh, though, the speed comes at you all over the ice. It's not just on transition. It's the back pressure. And you heard Joe Pavelski talking about that on game two. They just don't have as much time as they've had. And Rich nailed it. I mean, St. Louis is not the quickest team. They're a bit of a work-it-down-low, grinding-style type of team. And right now the Pittsburgh Penguins, even though I wouldn't say that, you know, they should be winning these games 5-0. I just don't think San Jose really has generated enough offense. When you don't have the puck, it's tough to do what you want to do. They need to have the puck. And we talked about it before. Guys like Connor Sheary and Brian Rust have come out of nowhere.
Absolutely.
But they're speedy little guys, and they complement Crosby and Bonino up the middle. Bonino's been excellent. To me, he's probably been the breakthrough player of these playoffs, a guy who was kind of cast off by Anaheim and Vancouver, and another guy who's cast off. That line, you could call it, instead of the HBK line, you could call it the cast-off line with Kessel and Hägglund. All three guys were traded, weren't members of the Penguins last year.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
That's been their best line in the playoffs. And Crosby, Sheary, and Hornquist has been a great line.
Well, that's just what I was going to get at, Ezzie, because that's a great point. Because you talk about those two lines, and they have been terrific. But yeah, you have to be, if you're San Jose, concerned that if Evgeny Malkin really hasn't got it going yet, and if he has, I mean, they need, you know, right now, San Jose obviously needs to win both these at home here. If Malkin goes off one game and really turns it on, and he needs to play, I think, at a more crisp pace and simplify his game a little bit. But if he is to get it going and these other two lines keep playing the way they are, it's going to be awfully difficult to stop.
Well, it's just you talked about the speed. I know we'll go over here. That's fine. You talked about the speed and how San Jose has to adjust to Pittsburgh's speed. Is that something they can adjust to just having seen them for two games? And, okay, now they realize this is the pace that they need to play at? Because, you know, you sort of get lulled into a false sense of security having played slower teams the last few rounds.
Yeah, I mean, you have to adjust. And I don't just mean strategically, and there will be adjustments that Peter DeBoer will have to make when he watches the video. But you just, you know, when you play any game, the speed, you'll adjust to the speed and you'll make decisions more quickly. That's something that they need to do, Drew. Having said that, just that won't necessarily be the difference maker. You know, their better players need to be their better players. I mean, you have to be, like, I thought last week when Ezzie and I were talking about it, if Crosby was able to match Thornton,
mm-hmm.
I thought the Penguins were in good shape. Because of the secondary scoring, I thought the Penguins had more. We just talked about Malkin and Bonino and all those guys. So far, Crosby has been far better.
Just quickly, Drew, one of the moves DeBoer made was putting Matt Nieto in for Zubras. And Matt Nieto is a good hockey player, but they brought in Zubras. I believe it wasn't until the second round against Nashville, if I'm not mistaken. I don't think he played at all against the Kings. Zubras was actually very effective. Slower guy, Nieto's faster.
Well, that's what, yeah. See, there
but
you go.
Nieto hadn't been playing much in the playoffs. So
no, he'd been injured, yeah.
To me, actually, that might have not been the best decision, but we'll see if they leave Nieto in over Zubras. But Zubras is actually a pretty effective forechecker. He's not a guy that's going to, you know, show up on the score sheet much, even though he's got a couple of points, I think, in the playoffs. But that was one move they made, but I mean, the Thornton-Pavelski hurdle line, that's the key for me. They haven't been very good in the first two games, and that was the best line, maybe with the exception of Hägglund, Bonino, Kessel, in the entire playoffs. So those guys have got to get going. I agree with Rich. You got to win two games here in San Jose.
And Eric DeHatrick pointed out on our playoff preview show, I mean, is there a faster line in hockey than that line?
I don't think so, Rich.
When you have Bonino and Kessel, and when you have Bonino, Kessel, and Hägglund on the wings, I mean,
yeah.
They're so easily able to make something out of nothing. And you remember that in game one, when I was just talking about when they pressured the third D pairing on San
Polak and Dylan.
Yeah, and what happened? It caused a turnover, and what happened? It resulted in a goal. And that was born out of speed and an aggressiveness, too. Mike Sullivan has done a nice job in terms of his system. Now, it's only 2-0. But the way it's looking right now, sounds they have to make a significant change in terms of their production and style of play.
It's only 2-0, and that was, you know, Peter DeBoer's point in the post-game press conference after game two. It was like, you know, we'll hold off on the funeral. It's 2-0.
That's right.
Each game has been a one-goal game.
That's right. Things change quickly in this game. So it's certainly not over. But if it is
tonight. If San Jose doesn't turn it around tonight, it's over.
If the way that if they continue to play the way they've played the fast two games, then it's not like Pittsburgh has been lucky to be victorious. They have deserved to be victorious.
Maybe San Jose will go down 3-0, and then they'll come back like LA did in 2014.
Well, we'll have to see if that's what's going to happen. Let's head to break when we come back. St. Louis has the same head coach. It's Ken Hitchcock, but it's his final year. We'll talk about it next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Well, I want one-year deals because it allows me to do the things I need to do. But I'm telling you right now, this is my last one-year deal. I'm not coaching after this year. This is it. So I'm done. I don't know if I'm going to retire. I might move over to the media. So we'll see. But
God, no.
But I'm not coaching after this year.
That is current St. Louis Blues head coach Ken Hitchcock re-signing with the Blues to be their head man for one more season, after which he's going to retire from being an NHL head coach. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg with you. This segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information or to make an appointment, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
You know, Les is in a great position because if you go to the dentist and of course, he's a great hockey fan. You're talking to him about a hockey issue.
Mm-hmm.
He can just make a point and then starts working in your mouth, and you can't reply.
No, exactly. You just get indoctrinated by your dentist.
That's right.
You know, and you can't argue with him, and you shouldn't argue with him because he's got sharp utensils.
This is true.
Also a valid point. Anyways, Ken Hitchcock, one more season behind the bench for the St. Louis Blues. Certainly did a great job with the Blues this year in keeping them together throughout a litany of injuries. Of course, they just suffered another injury as Alex Steen has undergone shoulder surgery. He's out for the next 4 months.
Yeah, should be back for next year's regular season, but nonetheless,
right?
It's not going to be the best offseason for him.
Certainly not. He'll have to be working on getting that shoulder up to speed. Your thoughts on Hitchcock pretty much, you know, saying this is his final year, you know, and then he's going to be done, you know. Behind the bench, any problems with him? You know, do they need an assistant coach to be the successor? You're now hearing Mike Yeo's name as possibly being that coach in waiting with the St. Louis Blues going forward.
Yeah, I don't understand that. Why do you need a coach in waiting?
I'm not sure.
Circumstances change. You don't know how the roster will play, you have an idea of the style of play will be under Ken Hitchcock, but how do you know it'll work? Why don't you just hire an assistant coach and then next year reevaluate? And I would be surprised if somebody was made a promise for the future head coaching position. It's also sometimes a difficult adjustment to make from an assistant coach to head coach because of the role you play with the players,
mm-hmm.
In terms of communication with them at a certain level, maybe a little more cozy with them than the head coach. Not everybody's able to make that successful switch over from assistant to head coach with the same team. So I'm not sure. I'm not really one who would advocate for hiring a coach to be in waiting. And you never know if Ken Hitchcock changes his mind.
Sure.
So,
or you never know if there's other coaches that become available and are more appealing than the guy you've appointed as the coach in waiting.
Exactly. Circumstances change. So, you hire what you believe to be the best candidate. Maybe it's an issue for you in terms of term, because a guy who comes in wants more than 1 year, and Hitchcock's only going to be there for 1 year, and the new guy may want to pick his staff. I understand that, but I'm sure there's people who would like to work with for a contending team with Ken Hitchcock at the helm for a year or two. Well, and get the experience.
Bradshaw and Kirk Muller, who were the assistant mm-hmm. coaches, said that's enough for them. Kirk Muller has gone and he's been hired as the associate coach in Montreal. We can talk about that as well. Does that ring alarm bells if you're Michel Therrien?
Well, no, I don't think necessarily. Kirk Muller was an assistant coach previously
with Montreal,
in addition to, of course, winning the cup and being the captain
sure.
of the Montreal Canadiens. I agree with Rich, though, and there's a good chance that Doug Armstrong, Martin Brodeur, his management team, they're not necessarily going to bring in someone who's mm-hmm. the coach, head coach in waiting. So if it's Mike Yeo, they bring in Mike Yeo, it could be for 1 year. It could be just to have him as an assistant coach going forward, right? So I agree with that. And I think, first of all, We played the Ken Hitchcock audio mm-hmm. at the top of the segment. I've always been a huge fan of Hitchcock. I know Rich is as well. And if he did join the media, I think that would be hilarious, because he's actually got an underrated sense of humor. But, Drew, you're talking about one of the greatest coaches of all time. If you look at how many career wins he has, mm-hmm. the success he's had in the playoffs, he's got a Stanley Cup. He should probably have more with some of the Blues teams that he's had here. But I think it's interesting because the St. Louis Blues are a team next year. They've gone to the conference finals now. They couldn't get past the San Jose Sharks. Next year, it's win or bust. And they're probably going to lose David Backes to free agency. And maybe Kevin Shattenkirk gets traded. But mm-hmm. next year, it's win the Stanley Cup or it's not a successful season. Like, for a St. Louis Blues team, they've got some good young players. You know, Richie mentioned Jaden Schwartz is probably going to be the number one focus in the offseason. You throw in guys like Tarasenko, Colton Parayko, Robbie Fabry. They've got good young players, but it's still a veteran group. Mm-hmm. Like when you're talking about the Alex Steens and...
Who's out for 4 to 6 months.
And the
now.
Paul Stastnys mm-hmm. and the Jay Bomeisters, Alex Petrangelos, Brian Elliott. Like, it's not an up-and-coming team. This is a contending team now, right, Richie? Mm-hmm. So for me, it's very interesting that he's come out and said, this is my last year. Because it's going to be a storyline of the year, I think, with Ken Hitchcock. I think... will go down as certainly a top 10 coach of all time, maybe a top 5 coach of all time. When you look at the longevity of his career, and he's never really had any bad teams. Like,
it's true.
How many seasons has Ken Hitchcock missed the playoffs? I don't even know if he's ever missed the playoffs.
Like with Columbus, wouldn't he have?
Yeah, I guess I wasn't counting Columbus, but with St. Louis and
like
Dallas.
Like so many NHL fans, they just don't count Columbus.
Well, Drew, you remember I picked Todd Richards to win Coach of the Year, so.
Well, maybe he can come on board as the assistant coach.
Well, it's possible. I mean, he is still a good coach. I think Columbus just got off to a horrible start. Anyways, we're digressing here. I think it's really a testament to his character that he's willing to say that. And I don't think that there's any connection with Kirk Muller leaving to Montreal and Ken Hitchcock deciding to stay for one more year. If that was the case and Kirk Muller wanted to be a head coach, why would he accept an assistant position with Montreal?
There's a couple of years where he got fired as in the middle of the season, so I'm not going to count those as missing the playoffs.
Yeah.
But actual seasons that he missed the playoffs... that he coached an entire year, like full through, because he came into Dallas. It was two seasons where he coached the entire, one season where he coached the entire year and missed the playoffs. Every other one, it was partial seasons where he was hired or fired.
Sure.
So, pretty impressive. I mean, I think Ken Hitchcock would be great in the media, and I think that his relationship with the media has allowed him to have a longer coaching career, I think. He's always spoken and been respectful of the media, and I think that plays a part, no doubt about it. I mean, you treat people respectfully, I think they're going to treat you back respectfully. His players, you know, he's harder on, and certainly behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
There's no doubt about that, and, you know, people will tell you how he can wear on you, and it can be negative and such. There's certainly no questioning his hockey IQ.
All right, are you surprised, Rich, that Muller left to go to Montreal? I mean, there's no real chance Bradshaw is ever going to become an NHL head coach at this point.
Well, I don't know. I don't know enough about Bradshaw. I know Kirk Muller has aspirations, likely, of being a head coach.
Again, because he was a head coach in Carolina. And he's supposedly a fairly hot young coaching candidate. You know, well, you learn from your mistakes, et cetera, et cetera.
For sure. I think you know, he's very strong on the power play. That's his expertise. The Blues were very good in the power play this year, both during the regular season and during the playoffs. The Montreal Canadiens need to improve their power play. He had been there before. So he's been there before coaching, and he's been there before playing. Certainly there's a comfort level in the city of Montreal for Kirk Muller, who's from Ontario, too. So, I mean, there's other aspects of this, too, Drew, that you have to take into account. And, of course, the uncertainty with Ken Hitchcock. So when you're a guy, see, again, I'm talking about Hitchcock and assistant coaches and such. When you're a guy who's established like Kirk Muller, it's a little bit of a different decision, and you want some more security than maybe another assistant coach who will take the opportunity to learn from a guy like Hitchcock. See, Muller's already had that opportunity, and I'm sure he learned a lot. He's learned a lot from Ken Hitchcock, and it's helpful for a guy, I think, to be able to play to be assistant coach under different head coaches. So you get to see the contrasts and styles and take the good things from them.
Guys, doesn't every assistant coach want to be a head coach?
Yeah, but I think at some point in time, assistant coaches in the league acknowledge what their, you know, their limitations are going to be, or the league sort of has dictated to them what their limitations are going to
sure,
be.
Sure, I agree with that. But, you know, this whole talk of, you know, it's almost like you're questioning if a coach is posturing. Like, I feel like a coach goes, first off, a coach's life in the NHL and in professional sports in general is short. You're hired to be fired. That's the saying goes, right? And in the NHL, especially this year, there has been a lot of turnover. Every year there's a lot of turnover. I think a coach goes wherever the paycheck is and wherever the best opportunity is. And maybe Kirk Muller thought that his opportunity to be a long-term assistant coach was better in Montreal than it was in St. Louis. Maybe he does see a future head coaching role and thinks that maybe if he goes to Montreal, he'll be able to reinvent himself in some way in Montreal. I'm not sure, but I do think a good point on the Ken Hitchcock situation is how many coaches are able to say, I'm only coming back for one more year. There aren't a lot of coaches that have that type of pull that they can
call
say, okay, Doug, I'm going to coach for one more year, and you know I'm in my mid-60s, then I'm going to retire. Like, that shows you how much confidence Doug Armstrong has in Ken Hitchcock that he thinks he can take them to the Stanley Cup and win it, I think.
Having said that, we talked about last week, Yezdi, I was very surprised he didn't go into the room after they lost, you know, Game 6 against San Jose. So kind of an odd tactic there, but he has been brought back. I guess there are no hard feelings, at least in terms of, you know, the management, and you assume the players. But I thought that was an odd tactic, and you weren't sure what approach he would take after that. But he's back, and he wants another crack at it. I don't see them going back with the exact same roster. I do see them making some changes. As you mentioned, the possibility of Kevin Shattenkirk being moved. He's 1 year left on his contract. Certainly would be an appealing guy. And, of course, with Colton Parayko coming up and able to take that second right defenseman spot, they may want to look to get stronger. Probably up front with a player, what I would guess.
You got Backes and Brouwer, both as UFAs, and both were tremendously valuable to what the Blues do. So it'll be interesting to see what those two, you know, if they lose both of them, if they lose one of them, and how they fill those spots. Because most of their young guys are back in, you know, are with the team now. They're up and their best up-and-coming prospects. Of course, you know, Tarasenko has been well-established, but Schwartz and Fabry, you know, had with his first full season in the NHL. It'll be an interesting offseason with regards to the St. Louis Blues. We'll see how that plays out. Let's head to break. Trade winds, they're beginning to blow in the NHL as we hit June. We'll talk about it next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Like a vision, she dances across the porch as the radio plays.
TSN1290.ca.
Richie, would you like to explain why we're playing so much Bruce, more than we normally do in the last segment of the show each and every week?
Yes, Drew. Sure, I would.
Thank you.
Yes, 32 years ago today, Born in the USA was released. Now, this is off of Born to Run, but Born in the USA, 32 years ago today, so we're going to play some Bruce all through the show.
Well, there you go. Thank you for explaining it to us. It's almost like we had that set up or something. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 10 minutes before the top of the hour. As we've been doing for the last, oh gosh, I don't even know how many months it's been, probably 3-4 months, we've been talking about the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life. Well, the day has finally come. Tomorrow, June the 5th, is the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life. It's still not too late. If you want to join the cycle, there's still opportunity to do it. I'll send out a tweet on our Twitter feed right now giving you information about how to sign up to join the cycle. If you want to raise money, if you want to contribute to Team Illegal Curve, still not too late to do that. I'm pleased to report, gentlemen, there's a number of quality team members. There's myself, there's you, Ezra, there's you, Richard, there's Alex Albany, who of course is a producer here at TSN 1290, and Tanis Mandel, who is better known as my mother. The group of us on the Team Illegal Curve has now raised over $6,000 for the Riverview Health Center Foundation. The Cycle on Life goes tomorrow morning, bright and early, a nice bike ride on a Sunday morning. I know that's how you usually spend your Sunday mornings there, Ezzy. So we're going to take care of that tomorrow. Still opportunity, still time to donate to Team Illegal Curve. Follow the link I'm going to send out on our Twitter feed. We've raised $6,000. We're thrilled to be participating in this great event tomorrow.
I went for a bike ride twice this week in anticipation. I'm super pumped up. In all seriousness, though, Drew, the fact that we've raised $6,000 is for a great cause is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So you're right. We've been looking forward to this for 4 months now, and tomorrow it should be a very nice day. We'll get up early, have a little coffee, get on our bikes, ride 25 kilometers.
Yeah.
And then I'll go to the hospital after.
Some people are going to ride 65 kilometers for the long ride. I believe Alex, producer Alex, is going to do the long ride because he's actually a cyclist, whereas both you and I, Ezzy, we're just posers. But there is lunch afterwards, so you can look forward to that.
I guess I could just go to the Riverview Health Center after the bike ride if I'm not feeling well.
Well, that's where it ends. That's where it ends. So you just drive right back there, and you're just makes perfect sense.
Well, they have like a stretcher there for me just waiting?
No, there's a massage therapy there, so you can get a massage after as well.
Wow.
Yeah, so you can.
Is it deep tissue?
I don't know how deep. I don't know if they can go deep enough into tissue.
Rory's shaking his head back there.
Anyway, so the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life goes tomorrow. We're thrilled to be participating in that and having raised just over $6,000. We thank everybody for their contributions to that. Tradewinds, as I mentioned before the break, tradewinds are picking up throughout the NHL. You know, the month of June generally is quite a busy month for the league, as the new league year obviously starts on July 1st. So that's when everybody can reset, recalibrate. All the players that have become unrestricted free agents can, you know, officially take to the market. You can go over the salary cap, so lots of trades, lots of machinations of that effect. Are you expecting the next, say, 5-6 weeks, particularly after the cup final ends, which could be this week or early next week, are you expecting that it's going to be a busy time in the NHL over the next, you know, month or so?
I think so, Drew. I think another thing that you have to notice is the possible expansion.
Absolutely. Yep.
Because if, and that announcement's coming, it appears around the last or second last week of June, you'd expect it to be probably before the draft if it comes out. Don't want to overshadow the draft.
Sure.
If there is expansion on the horizon and say there's an expansion draft next year, that changes a lot for teams and how they want to, you know, do they have the luxury of depth. Teams with the luxury of depth are going to be penalized for crafting teams.
For drafting well.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think that will probably result in more movement as well. So I would expect it to be pretty active, and I think, you know, you've heard it, and it's true, really. The trade deadline has kind of moved from March or end of February to the draft and the week before the draft, because that's when you have the most room, as you mentioned off the top here, Drew, the most room with the salary cap.
Yeah, I agree with you, Rich. I think that it's going to be very busy. I don't know if it's going to be very busy the coming week, but I think especially at the draft. We saw some movement last year at the draft with Boston acquiring the three consecutive first-round picks, trading Dougie Hamilton, and there were other trades. Martin Jones, you remember, was traded to the San Jose Sharks.
To Boston and then to San Jose.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
And when you consider that there are some pretty big names out there, I mean, we talked about it last segment, a guy like Kevin Shattenkirk might be on the move. I think St. Louis would be well advised to keep him, but with the salary considerations, they might not be able to keep him. And Parayko, as Rich mentioned, is a guy that's developed, maybe make room. We've already seen Eric Gudbranson traded for Jared McCann last week, Drew, and that was a significant trade. When you're talking about a top four defenseman and a potential top six forward, at the very least, he's going to play in the top nine of Florida next year, right? So I think we're going to see some big trades, and you say that every year, but I also think because of how deep the draft is this year, and it's not just Matthews, Laine, and Puljujarvi. After those three guys, you're hearing that Matthew Tkachuk might go sixth overall, he might go fourth overall, and if a team like Edmonton really likes Matthew Tkachuk, they'll take him, but also a team might a team like Calgary or Vancouver might want to move up. So maybe they you know, put a defenseman in front of Peter Chiarelli and say, okay, we'll give you this defenseman and another player and maybe for maybe the fourth overall pick or something like that. So I do think you're going to see some significant trades. Steven Stamkos, is he going to sign with the Tampa Bay Lightning or is he going to go to free agency? There's going to be a lot of teams that are after Steven Stamkos. So I think it's a good year for unrestricted free agency. And as we mentioned before, Rich mentions the expansion draft, which is, it's possible that Las Vegas comes in 2017-18, right?
Mm-hmm.
Some people think it might be 18-19, but it might be the year after next year. And if that's the case, to Rich's point, then teams are going to have to decide who they're going to keep and who they really value. And if they think that they're not going to protect a player, it's probably more likely that they trade that player, right?
Well, we talked about it before about, say, the Marc-Andre Fleury and Matt Murray in Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. Can't keep both of them. You got to really, you got to open up one of them. So,
well, on that point, it was interesting. Sorry, Drew, to cut you off. Jim Neal this week said that, you know, he has all the confidence in Kari Lehtinen.
Yes,
but
I heard that.
The way Lehtinen and Niemi played with Dallas and the firepower that they have, and they've improved their defense with bringing in Johnny Oduya and the emergence of John Klingberg. But I don't know if you're Jim Neal, you're probably not going into the season next year, I think, with the most confidence with those two guys. I agree with you, Rich. I think if you can get a Marc-Andre Fleury on the free agent, pardon me, on the trade market, I think you do it.
And, you know, to that point, I mean, if you're going to lose these guys for nothing, then you want to move them. So that's why it will probably accelerate movement on some of these players. Maybe they would be on the market, but they'll especially be on the market because of the risk of losing them for no compensation at all next year. And I realize you have a year to trade them, but the freedom of the cap space that you have in the offseason allows for more movement.
Sure. I think the goalie area is probably particularly going to be one of the busiest because at least the goaltenders, it's clear you can't protect more than one. Whereas, you know, the forwards and the defense, you can, you know.
Well, the rules are possibly shifting. You're not hearing, you know, about how many, you know, I think it was Elliot Freeman, will there be restrictions on cap now, like a certain amount of money you have to leave available or unavailable? We'll see. But that I think that will shape some of the decisions that are made.
Yeah. And that'll be very interesting to keep an eye on over the next month and then into the 2016-17 NHL calendar year. Let's head to break. When we come back, we begin our draft previews by speaking with TSN prospect analyst, director of scouting, Craig Button. He's coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. We're working on getting Craig Button on the line to join us to talk about the upcoming NHL draft. It's taking place in Buffalo, New York on the 24th and 25th of June. This segment of the show brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. You know, we're trying to get Craig Button on the line, as I mentioned. A lot of chatter I'm hearing, I have trouble believing it, that the Jets are really enamored with Matthew Tkachuk of the London Knights. I mean, can you foresee any scenario where Patrick Laine really isn't the Winnipeg Jets selection or Austin Matthews if the Leafs decide to throw a curveball down the road?
Well, sure, Drew. You can foresee any scenario where the Jets draft another player, and it's probably not going to happen. I think that if Austin Matthews goes number one to Toronto, the Winnipeg Jets are going to take Patrick Laine. That doesn't mean that the Jets scouting staff doesn't think Jesse Puljujarvi and Matthew Tkachuk are good hockey players. It's just that they will take Patrick Laine because they believe he's a better player and a better fit for the organization, right? You look at the way Matthew Tkachuk, Mitch Marner, and Christian Dvorak tore up the OHL playoffs and in the Memorial Cup defeating the Brandon Wheat Kings. I mean, you can make an argument that Matthew Tkachuk could go third or fourth overall, but I certainly don't see the Jets passing up on Line A.
I would be surprised, Drew. I mean, you can like certain players and maybe want to create a package to acquire a higher draft pick, you know, through other means. I can't see the Jets. Again, I haven't seen any of these guys play extensively, aside from a little bit in terms of the World Championships there. Mm-hmm. So I didn't get a chance to watch a lot of the Mem Cup enough to have an opinion. But based on the consensus of those top two guys, I would be surprised if anybody went off the board.
When you're talking Patrick Laine, he just won the World Hockey Championship MVP as an 18-year-old, and he won the Finnish League MVP as an 18-year-old. I mean, you're talking about a can't-miss prospect, a guy that could potentially score 50 goals in the NHL. Not to say that Matthew Tkachuk couldn't score 50 goals in the NHL, Drew, but I think all of the speculation, I think there's more of a chance that Matthew Tkachuk moves up to maybe fourth overall and goes to the Edmonton Oilers, or maybe the Calgary Flames take him at fifth overall. Do they have five? Either fifth or sixth overall. I think Vancouver,
Calgary, one
right.
or the other. Yeah.
So I think the debate right now is who's going to go after Matthews, Laine, and Puljujarvi. And I think it becomes an interesting argument because Pierre-Luc Dubois is a guy who apparently the Vancouver Canucks really like. Mm-hmm. And then there are rumors that potentially Edmonton, if they keep their pick, takes a defenseman, whether that's Olli Juolevi or Mikhail Sergachev. Apparently they like Olli Juolevi the best. After the third and fourth picks, there's a lot more speculation. I think everybody expects it to be Matthews, Laine, Puljujarvi. After that, it's anybody's guess.
Well, you know, when you have a guy like Ray Ferraro, you know, TSN hockey analyst, of course, you know, he's not prone to hyperbole. But when you have Ray Ferraro coming out, he got to see him for, you know, he got to see Laine in person at the World Hockey Championships. And he comes out and he says he's got a top five shot in the entire NHL. I mean, this isn't a guy who's going to blow smoke Where you know, to every random player. He's not John Gruden saying this guy's the greatest NFL player, you know, when he talks about some random scrub.
No, Ray Ferraro was a good NHL player, and he isn't the
type of
guy.
And he's the best hockey analyst in the game, to my perspective.
I think
so.
I think Ray Ferraro is the best, and you're right, Drew. He's not going to throw out comments like that if he doesn't mean it. But if you've watched, and Rich mentions, you know, Patrick Laine in the World Hockey Championships, the World Juniors, playing in the Finnish Elite League, Superliga. I mean, the guy has had an incredible season. I mean, he's the second-rated prospect. Mm-hmm. And he even said himself at the Combine when he was interviewed by Gary Lawless, he said, I could see myself going first overall. And I think you could make the argument that Laine goes first overall. But when you're talking about Austin Matthews, a center, different position, I think the Toronto Maple Leafs are probably going to find it hard not to take Austin Matthews.
Well, you know, a lot of people are saying, oh, he's too arrogant, he's too cocky. You know, I want a guy who has a bit of a chip on his shoulder and thinks he's the best. You know, I don't think there's a difference between arrogance when you can't back it up. And, you know, and I don't know if he can back it up at the NHL level. I've never seen him at the NHL level. But I've seen him play. You know, I've seen, you know, seen him play against men in Finland and seen him play against men at the World Hockey Championships. And nothing about his performance, particularly at the World Hockey Championships, says that he won't be able to translate his brashness, let's say, into the NHL.
There's a difference, Drew, between confidence and cockiness. I think Patrick Laine is confident. I don't find him to be arrogant at all. And, you know, whether it's his celebrations after he scores and stuff like that, I love that. And so I have no problem with that. I don't think that there are many scouts that have a big problem with his character. And there was an incident with his coach when he was 16 years old, but that was a couple of years ago. And, I mean, players make mistakes sometimes, and he even admitted that that was a mistake, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have any problem with that. I think at the end of the day, this guy is a bona fide sniper who has 50-goal potential in the NHL, and I think that's going to make it almost impossible for the Jets not to take him at number two.
I would agree with you. Go ahead, Rich.
I just think people need things to talk about before the draft. That's all.
That's probably a fair comment.
People are going to say stuff and leak stuff to try and misdirect and things like that. You just have to watch for that. Today's June 4th. Drafts in 3 weeks today.
Yeah.
Or 3 weeks yesterday, I guess. There'll be a lot of misdirection here. You just have to kind of not get too caught off guard by it and fall for it.
And, Richie, Peter Chiarelli at the Memorial Cup, I don't know if you guys saw him being interviewed at the Memorial Cup. He was very honest and said, Yeah, we might trade it. Well, we might use it.
Scott Housen today came out and said something similar, you know, that, you know, we're probably going to trade the fourth overall. The Oilers are talking
third overall.
Pardon me, the third. No, the Oilers are. Scott Housen's with the Oilers.
Yes, I'm
He's a bad executive with the Oilers. He's not a bad executive with the Blue Jackets anymore. But the Oilers, again, the entire organization, they're talking too much. The Oilers. Just stop talking for once.
It depends on what they get. I don't really care if they're talking or not. It depends on what they get, right?
But they all, you know, they always seem to just be spouting off unnecessarily as an organization. I don't understand it. You would have thought they would have learned their lesson a little bit over the last, I don't know, decade, where they've just been
different guys in charge, though, Drew.
I know, but I still find that they're talking too much. It's bizarre. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's something in the water in Edmonton that makes them, you know, maybe a little too. It's not like they're saying anything particularly interesting. It's not saying anything we don't already know that, yeah, the trade, they might want to trade that pick. But just stop talking so much. Stop saying yes, 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 and not really saying anything of substance.
I don't have a problem with it just because Peter Chiarelli's always been a pretty outspoken guy. He's a very bright GM, great track record with Hockey Canada and the Boston Bruins, and before that as an assistant GM, Rich. But when you're talking about the Edmonton Oilers here, and I actually find it refreshing for this reason, because you hear a lot of GMs that don't say anything.
Mm-hmm. But I don't think that they're actually saying anything. That's my point.
Well, I mean, he's being honest. And when I've heard Peter Chiarelli in the last 2 or 3 weeks, I mentioned at the Memorial Cup, he's saying, if there's the right trade, we'll accept it. I don't think he's saying anything out of line. And I think the Edmonton Oilers are a candidate to move their pick when you consider that right now they've got a couple of great young hockey players in Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, and then you throw in Jordan Eberle and Taylor Hall. Maybe they move Nugent Hopkins. We know they're going to move Nail Yakupov, but they need a defenseman. So, sure, they could draft a defenseman. You could draft Ole Ulevi, but it might take 3 years before Ole Ulevi becomes what you want him to become. Right. So I think there's a good chance Oilers move that pick.
Right.
And there's always the chance that a team ahead of the Oilers move the pick. But when you consider that Jesse Puljujarvi is projected to also be a frontline winger. You forget Puljujarvi after Matthews and Laine. Puljujarvi for much of the season was projected to go second overall. And I don't see Jarmo Kekalainen and John Davidson passing up Puljujarvi, but certainly there's a chance that some of these top picks get moved.
It certainly is a possibility. I think from Jets fans' perspective, I think as interesting as the debate at number two is going to be, I think the more interesting one is almost that second first round pick they have at number 22 to see what they're going to do with that, because that's sort of, you know, it's later in the first round. So are you looking to use that pick? Are you looking to package that pick with something else? Obviously, we don't know the answer to that question as of yet, but I think that's really going to be a particularly interesting portion of the draft for Jets fans to see what Kevin Sheveldayoff and the Brain Trust decide to do with that second first round pick, see if they can use that as ammunition to do anything else. Obviously, we're having some trouble getting a hold of Craig Button. We'll hopefully bring him to you later on in the program, and if we don't, we'll try and get him on next week, of course. Before we head to break, I'll read you the entire quote from Ray Ferraro about Patrick Laine, in case you missed it earlier in the week. Quote, he's a powerful kid who probably doesn't realize yet what he has in the toolbox. Right now, it's all about his shot. Why not? If you popped him into the NHL right now, on this day, he's got a top five shot in the entire league. His shot is unreal. And it's not just the one-timer. It's his wrist shot, too. His mechanics and his release are elite. You know how some guys just hit the golf ball further than anyone else and you don't know why? Well, that's this kid and his shot. But he's going to figure out he has more than just the shot. He's almost 6'5", and his reach is Mario Lemieux-like. When he puts his body between you and the puck and extends his arms, you're 7 feet away from the puck. It's impossible to take the puck from him. I'll say this, he really won me over at the Worlds, at the World Hockey Championships. That's Ray Ferraro talking about Patrick Laine. We'll know in 3 weeks, less a day, if the Winnipeg Jets do end up taking Patrick Laine at number 2 overall. Let's head to break. When we come back, the New York Islanders signed Casey Cizikas to a 5-year contract extension. We'll talk about that, and we'll talk about Kyle Wokposo, our UFA of the week. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Four 4 seconds to go, and here's the breakaway. Tsitsikas in. He scores! Casey Tsitsikas shorthanded. The Islanders, after Pittsburgh is denied the opening goal, come down ice. Casey Tsitsikas, 1-0 Islanders.
That was Casey Tsitsikas of the New York Islanders scoring a shorthanded goal. He scored off the ice as well this week, signing a 5-year contract extension worth $16.75 million. It's an average annual value of $3.35 million, a nice raise from the $1 million he was making this past year, so he's gets some bank. Casey Tsitsikas, 25 years old, of the New York Islanders. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by Bell Acres Golf and Country Club and Clear Lake Golf Course. Illegal Curve is thrilled to be presenting the 2016 Bell Acres Pro-Am coming up on Friday, July the 8th. Play with a pro and enjoy an incredible day of golf featuring hole prizes, pre- and post-round meals, and post-round live entertainment. For more information, visit bellacres.com.
Yeah, super pumped about that, Drew. You already got a round in this week. Rory and I are going to hopefully get a round here at Bell Acres, and super pumped up about that.
Richie's practicing for the long drive competition because you're a big hitter off the tee there, Rich.
I don't know where it's going, though.
Yeah, it's sort of the part of the problem is, you know, usually the long drive only counts if it's in the fairway, and they tend not to.
Right,
they might be in a different hole's fairway.
Richie? Why didn't Ezzy mention me when he said Rory? Am I not invited?
Apparently, well, you've been uninvited.
No, Richie, you're invited. I didn't mean to exclude you.
Ezzy, apparently.
By the way, Rich can crush the ball off the tee, and he's got a very good short game as well, which is very important in golf.
No, he's got okay. You've been working on your short game in the offseason there, Rich?
He's just being modest.
I mean, no.
Anyways, Casey Tsitsikas gets the 5-year, $16.75 million contract extension. Your thoughts on that contract for Tsitsikas, for the Islanders, for GM Garth Snow? You know, the Islanders are sort of an interesting team, and we have Arthur Staple coming up next segment. He covers the Islanders because they have a lot of key players who are UFAs.
Yep.
Tsitsikas, Okposo, Nielsen, all those three forwards are UFAs at the coming up on July 1st.
Well, not Tsitsikas, he signed.
Martin, you mean.
Pardon me, right. Matt Martin. But no, Tsitsikas was a UFA.
Right.
So I'm saying, my point was, are you surprised that Snow seems to have made Tsitsikas the priority over some of those other guys?
I don't know if he was the priority, Drew. For 2 years now, I've been talking about how much I like Casey Tsitsikas, and I think everybody started to clue in on it this past offseason.
He was an RFA, Drew, and this he's bought out UFA years as well, I believe.
Pardon me, he was... No,
he's going to be an RFA.
Yes, he was going to be an RFA. That's
just to
right.
clarify. Sorry, Ezzy, go ahead. Right. Yes.
Well, Tsitsikas, as you know, Drew, has been such a big part of that fourth line with Cal Clutterbuck and Matt Martin.
That's
but
right.
Not surprised that they signed Casey Tsitsikas to the term because they're going to lose Kyle Okposo. They're most likely going to lose Matt Martin. Casey Tsitsikas, if you've watched the Islanders play, and I've watched the Islanders play quite a bit over the last several years, he's a guy that they put out on the penalty kill. He takes a lot of draws. He's good on faceoffs. He had a career year this year, 8 goals, 30 points. But he's a guy who was a late draft pick. He's been a kind of staple on that fourth line. But I think now, especially if they lose Franz Nielsen, Rich, there's a chance they sign Franz Nielsen. We'll ask Arthur Staple about that. But I think they're going to expect more out of Casey Tsitsikas, probably going to elevate him to a third line role now. And really, on most teams, he would be a third line center. And he's an excellent player. Goes into the dirty areas, physical guy, good hockey sense. I love that line, the so-called CCM line on the New York Islanders. Clutterbuck's got 1 year left on his contract, and Martin's probably not going to be re-signed, but a physical line. Martin led the NHL in hits for many years. Good player as well, but just not as versatile and valuable as Tsitsikas. So, yeah, he's making $3.5 million, but I'll take Casey Tsitsikas on my team any day of the week.
I mean, I was surprised that he was able to get as much money as he was, and due respect to Casey Tsitsikas, because as he mentioned, a lot of the good qualities that he brings to the table. I mean, he's anchored their fourth line there. That's been a fourth line. They rely on four lines. I think that's one of the main reasons that they were able to win the first round this year, playing a lot of overtime games, but relying on four lines, you're able to have the depth. They set the tone. They kill penalties. He's an exception. I mean, you could argue he's the best fourth line center in the game.
I think he is.
One of them for sure. But, I mean, it's – and he's pretty productive when it comes to you know, creating offense based upon the role that he's in and cast with. And in reality, he's the most offensively skilled, I think, of the three guys that he plays with. So I like his game. Am I surprised he gets that long term and that money? I am. But
he's a guy who's capped out at 30 points. He had 30 points this year. That's the most offense he's ever produced in the NHL.
Right. Now, I mean, it has to be relative to the role that he plays, Drew, who he plays with, and how often he's in scoring situations and things like that. So, I mean, that's a factor there, too. But if he's playing, I think it's Ezzy's point, if he's playing your fourth line, I mean, I know you're rolling four lines, but paying a fourth line center that much money, that's a considerable jump.
Can he play a higher role than
yes,
fourth line center?
Absolutely. And he scored 30 points on the fourth line. Not many guys can score 30 points playing the entire year on the fourth line, and he's more of a defensive forward. So I think you don't want to just look at his stats. He's never going to be a guy that scores 30 goals in the NHL. He's probably never going to score 25 goals. Might be able to score 20 if he's given more power play time, for example. But he's a really good player. And Garth Snow, by the way, has a great track record with contracts. The Travis Hamonic contract was a great contract.
That's fair.
The last contract that Franz Nielsen signed.
They're paying Kulemin and Grabowski just under $10 million.
Well, you know, at the time, though, Drew, they needed those guys to round out their three scoring lines. And Kulemin, I would say, has been probably a better signing. Not that Grabowski hasn't added anything. I don't like Grabowski. You know that I don't like Grabowski. That's a bad contract. But he does have a good record with some other contracts.
Those have been their misses. They've made a lot more. They've had a lot more hits.
Sure, that's fine. I just, you know, full picture is all I'm wanting to present.
They've had a lot more hits. I think Eddie's point is that they get to be able to sign these $2.5 to $4 million contracts, a lot of which provide value for the team.
Let's shift our focus to
John Tavares, by the way. That contract's unbelievable.
Yeah, that's the best contract. Absolutely. That's a terrific contract. Kyle Okposo. We mentioned him.
Okposo just come off $2.8 million, Drew. I mean,
all right, it was a great contract.
Franz Nielsen's $2.75. He's 32.
All right, those were fantastic contracts. Yeah. I know. I'm not criticizing Garth Snow. I think he's an underrated general manager. I'm just saying that, you know, he has had a couple misses, as all
sure.
GMs
I mean,
do.
I bet every GM will have misses.
Absolutely. Yeah. So Kyle Okposo, we mentioned him as the UFA of the week. You mentioned he's coming off of a contract that was 5 years and $14 million. He certainly outpaid that. He's 28 years old. What's Kyle Okposo worth on the open market? How do you factor Kyle Okposo being away from John Tavares, potentially, in the contract negotiations?
Well, I mean, anybody who plays away from John Tavares, you probably expected a downturn in terms of his offense, unless he's playing with a similarly skilled player, and there aren't many of them, on another team. Having said that, you know, you could play John Tavares is one thing, but to be able to produce points is another, and then they had a great chemistry. And you're talking about a guy over the past three seasons who's put up 69 points, 51 points, and 64 points. He's an exceptionally hard worker. He's very strong. I think he gets more out of his game than some people would in his situation. I don't think he's the most naturally gifted player. I think he plays really hard. He can shoot the puck. He's strong. He seems really well liked by his teammates. He's a guy, and he's at the age where we talked earlier about Erickson and about Ladd, but you look at the age of Okposo being 28. Now, his game's hard. Plays a hard game. But you get a couple years of youth and on the right side there. And we, you know, Ladd's left winger. Erickson is a right winger, but Okposo's a different type of right winger. I think he's going to command 5 to 6 years at probably $5.5 to $6 million.
So he's going
to
get the contract that Ladd and Backes really want.
Probably.
And that function of that is probably is the fact he's, you know, two, three years younger than those guys.
And a lot of people seem to think it's a foregone conclusion that Kyle Okposo is going to the Minnesota Wild because he's from Minnesota. I don't know if that's necessarily true. I think it's possible, but I think there are going to be other teams that are going to be in the Kyle Okposo sweepstakes, if you want to call it that.
That's true. Now, I do think on that point about the Wild, that is what they need. They need physicality up front. They need to get a little bit younger up front. I can see the fit there. But there's you know, they've locked a lot of money into their roster.
I don't know if they can afford him, Rich. And for me, another team Kyle Okposo could work with, and it depends if they re-sign Milan Lucic, is L.A., a power forward who could possibly play with an Anze Kopitar or a Jeff Carter on one of their top two lines. But I agree with you. I think Okposo's a guy that you probably signed to 5 years. It's going to be a big loss for the Islanders because Kyle Okposo and John Tavares were so good on the first line, and even if Okposo was on the second line, He was always a valuable member of the team, and he's going to be hard to replace. The Islanders are going to have to replace these guys. They're for sure losing Okposo and Martin and maybe Nielsen as well.
Let me ask you, say that they're for sure losing them, and I don't necessarily disagree. Well, but
why weren't they signed?
Why aren't they signing Okposo? Or why aren't they signing Nielsen if they end up not signing him? I mean, they have 17 guys under contract for next season and $57 million in salary cap commitments. Mm-hmm. So they're not totally, I mean, it's not like they don't have as prohibitive of a cap situation as some of the other teams that we're talking about right now. Minnesota's got a way worse cap situation. LA's got a way worse cap situation. So why don't the Islanders necessarily want to bring back Kyle Okposo at the dollars we're talking about?
Well, I mean, they may not. They probably wouldn't think that he's worth that. And they've seen him play, and that would be their judgment call.
Sure.
I think with Franz Nielsen, it's more so the age factor.
Well, Franz Nielsen's 32 years old. I get that. And so, I mean,
I'm not saying that they won't sign Okposo. I mean, you never know.
Right.
I mean, one team I think that would be, I see your point there, Drew, but I mean, you always have these considerations down the road. 2 years, you're going to be paying John Tavares if he resigns.
Mm-hmm.
$8-10 million. Right now, granted, you have Grabowski and Kluman coming off at the same time. You're going to have goaltenders. You're going to need to shore up your defense, and you need another defenseman there. I mean, there are other factors that need to be taken into account. Ryan Strome, they're likely going to be able to re-up for a pretty cheap price here because of his down season, but he probably wouldn't want to sign long-term. But it's a fair point. Maybe they want the flexibility. They want to dip it to the market. I mean, there are rumors. I mean, I don't know. That's certainly not true. There's rumors about everything these days, but that they have possible designs of trying to pair up Steven Stamkos with John Tavares, the two Toronto area boys playing together. You never know, right? They can make a stab at it and go to Okposo second, and that's an option.
That's a good point, though, Rich. It does give them a lot of cap flexibility.
And that's one thing. I think Garcon's done a nice job with the cap, and that's why he has these options here. And he's not one. I think one thing about Garcinot you need to know is that he's not one to get pushed around or get intimidated by agents or other teams. You look at the way he handled the Brock Nelson. You're signing on our terms or not,
mm-hmm.
basically. He'll hardball when he needs to. And maybe he says, here, you know, we're interested in you, but we want to see what our options are. And that's the right that they have. One other team that I think might be interested or would be an interesting fit roster-wise is the Montreal Canadiens for Kyle Okposo. They need better secondary scoring. They need to get bigger and stronger. And they have some cap space to make a move there. Now, again, they're rumored to also be a team in possibly interested in Steven Stamkos. We will see.
Yeah, all 30 teams.
but I could see that team being interested as well.
Let's head to break. When we come back, Arthur Staple from Newsday Newspaper in Long Island joins us to talk a little more about the Cizikas signing and the Islanders' offseason. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.